Darrell Revis, what does he have left, and does a switch to safety save him? We're also going to look at what might have been the Stephon Gilmore-Malcolm Butler trade-off in New England, why Colin Kaepernick still hasn't been signed, and running back dominoes start to fall, including a possible comeback for Marshawn Lynch. All that and much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I'm here with Andy Benoit, and we are back to football. I know a lot of you out there, you are watching basketball. You are watching, just completely unwatchable college basketball. But that's over. The excitement of that is over. We are moving back to football. We're going to refocus. There's some stuff you probably missed while you were out day drinking and watching NCAA tournament basketball, but we're going to get to a lot of that. A couple big names still out there. A couple big names kind of falling into place here, especially the running back position. Andy, this was a quietly interesting week, I felt.
Yeah, I would agree. They kind of tied up some loose ends across the NFL. We have a few situations with players still up in the air, and not just like the Romos and the Garoppolos that we've talked about ad nauseum for weeks, but we're going to get into Kaepernick a little bit later. And I like where things are at in the NFL right now. It's been a fun couple of weeks here.
It has.
Number one.
Well, we're actually going to start with a guy who is out there right now. That is Darrell Revis. This is going to be topic number one. And, oh, by the way, we're going to go with the regular season format. We're going to give you 10 topics right here. I'm going to start with Darrell Revis. The good news for him, he has been cleared of any wrongdoing in that incident down in Pittsburgh. He has been let go by the Jets. He is a free agent right now. He is out there for the taking. He was not good last year, and we can talk about that a little bit right now. Andy, you think some of it might have had to do with some shoulder problems?
Well, maybe. I never speculate on that kind of thing because there's no end to that. Every guy has something, and to what degree it hurts him, we'd just be guessing. Even guys that have the same injury on paper are impacted differently by their injuries. Everybody's different. I know one theory that was out there that Revis kind of gave some credence to is I think he had a hand or a wrist injury, and it compromised his ability to jam guys coming off the line of scrimmage. And that really changes the equation for a cornerback. So if that was a factor, I could buy into that. What gives me pause about all of it, though, is his recovery speed was not where it used to be. So his legs aren't what they used to be, and he's not as twitchy or fast as he was, which is why we're hearing about a possible position change. And really, I think what he would need at this point is to be a zone cornerback. I don't know if moving to safety is the right idea. I think playing in a scheme that doesn't ask him, Revis Island needs to be retired. Darrell Revis can keep playing, though.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this when we did our cornerback show last summer, especially in regards to Patrick Peterson and the fact that, guys with this body type, I mean, Revis is he's a big physical corner, and people automatically assume, well, he can tackle, therefore he can play safety. I believe the term is spatial awareness, Andy, and that is a huge question mark with a guy who has played press coverage, tight man coverage for his entire career. Can he be out there in open space and make the kind of reactions and close with the kind of speed that he needs to?
Yeah, that's a great, great point, Gary, because what Revis has been brilliant at, why he's going to be a Hall of Famer, is he understands spatial awareness between him and his man. He understands the nuances of an individual route and how to beat a guy and take away his route-running tendencies. When you are a safety, and even to lesser degree but still a degree, when you're a zone corner, you don't read one route. You're usually reading multiple routes because you're in a zone area, and the way teams beat your zones is by sending multiple receivers into the same zone and putting you in a bind. So could he do that? I'm sure he could do it. He's been on the field a lot. It's not like he's played man coverage every single snap of his career. But there are guys, and yes, Patrick Peterson's one. Peterson is not a comfortable zone player. He would never make a good safety. He's not a very enthusiastic tackler either. Revis is much closer to being Peterson than he is to being a traditional NFL zone corner. So his transition to the safety position, it would probably not be very smooth. But when we're talking about a guy with his talent and his football IQ, it's still worth assuming he could make the transition.
Yeah, he's reportedly lost 10 pounds this offseason, so you'd hope maybe that would alleviate some of the speed issues, but he is just he's a huge question mark right now, and I believe someone gave Peter King the quote that they wouldn't let Revis play on their team for free. People are down on his 2016 tape, and rightfully so. You know, presumably someone will give him a shot because he has been a great player in the league, but I don't think anyone's necessarily going to count on him. And one team he has been linked to, and we'll move on to topic number two.
Number two.
The New England Patriots. And the Patriots, you know, everyone's very, very bullish on their offseason. And, you know, you add Brandon Cooks, a big short-term bump right there. You know, they bring in Stephon Gilmore, and they added a couple nice pieces as well. Right now, Malcolm Butler is a huge question because it seems like Malcolm Butler is a little bit he's a little bit hurt that he didn't get paid when they had all that cap room, and he's in the last year of his rookie deal as an undrafted rookie. You know, and this might come down to the type of thing where they could have given that Gilmore money or a good chunk of it. I don't even know if Butler would have cost as much as Gilmore came in for, but they might have been able to give some of that to Butler and basically have Malcolm Butler instead of Stephon Gilmore. And I mean, look, we're speculating here at this point, but I'll just ask you flat out, Andy, if the Patriots had known the choice would ultimately come down to we can have Gilmore or we can have Butler, which guy would you have rather had?
I think I would rather have had Butler. He's been the more effective player. Gilmore's the more talented player, the more talented specimen. Butler's been the more effective player, though, the last few years. And he's one of those few guys who can travel into the slot and man coverage. I don't think he could do that in zone, but he can do it in man-to-man. And he's very good on the perimeter, and he's a competitor, and we know what kind of player he is. He's also one of the few guys in the NFL that can travel with smaller receivers. He matches up to the Antonio Brown type guys. Gilmore is more of a matchup to the bigger, the Demaryius Thomas type guys, for example. So I am a little surprised that they're higher on Gilmore than they are on Butler, but let's keep in mind, they know much more about these guys than we do. They've had to play against Gilmore, mm-hmm. So they have a perspective of where his weaknesses are. They have a different look at it, and they are around Butler every single day, and they probably know how much money he wants. So they have information we don't have, but at our perspective, 30,000 feet, I think Butler's been the more effective player of the two.
Yeah, and look, it makes you scratch your head a little bit, and again, I don't want to wouldn't want to offend the delicate genius and you know come here and you know fire the hot takes at Bill Belichick, because certainly he has the track record a little bit better than mine in the NFL. They lost Logan Ryan. I mean, that's another guy. That's another guy who can play the boundary or can play the slot, and it just feels like you're losing that. You know, they love that flexibility all over the field, every position, both sides of the ball. They love guys who can do multiple things, and it seems like they're potentially losing two cornerbacks who can do that for a very good cornerback who's really just more of a pure boundary guy.
Do you really think Belichick's delicate? You called him a delicate genius.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think the people around, but I've never gotten the sense that Belichick's sensitive to criticism or that he's even ever understood or heard any of it or given a damn. But I know what you're saying.
You know the Seinfeld reference, right?
I do. I will if you remind me. I've seen all those episodes.
Oh, it's the one with the woman who was on Just Shoot Me after that. The chiropodist.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh man. All right. Well, now you gotta watch Seinfeld.
I've seen every episode.
The
of
amount
Seinfeld,
of homework you
times.
Have for this show, Andy.
Yeah. I get what you're saying about the Patriots cornerbacks. Gilmore, and they probably, my guess would be they feel he could travel to the slot as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's even how they'd want to use him. I don't know. It'll be fun to see how they use Gilmore because he's a little bit of a blank canvas. Just the fact that he's a man-to-man type defender, he's only played in one spot in Buffalo, but the more I think about it as we're talking along here, I wouldn't be surprised if they think he can travel all over the formation.
Okay. Yeah, and overall, New England, they're thin at cornerback right now, even if they hang on to Butler. You get past that, you get Eric Rowe, another big boundary guy, and you get Cyrus Jones, who was a mid-round pick last year.
Second-round pick.
Was he a second-round pick?
Yeah.
Oh.
In their case, it's going to be late second round. But
yeah. He's mostly known for his special teams gaffes last year. But, we really don't know what he is at this point.
No, but they have an idea. So,
yeah.
And remember, they plug in guys at cornerback. They'll sign guys off the street and play them as their number three 1 week. They are very type-driven at the cornerback position, meaning they look at specific attributes and how those attributes match up to the opponent that week. So Eric Rowe's a great example. He is a traditional boundary corner, a long-armed guy, very physical. He's going to be great in some games and other games where teams don't have those lanky receivers. He probably won't see the field. So we got to be careful when we look at New England's depth chart at cornerback and think we understand it, because they see their corners and they use them very differently than a lot of teams.
Yeah. Yeah, Butler's also the only one of those guys who wasn't drafted in the first two rounds then that we just rung off in those cornerback guys. Rowe, of course, was a Philadelphia Eagles pick back in 2015 who washed out there, and then just another one of those high draft picks that washes out someplace. Patriots pick him up and find a way to use him. A couple other quick moves that the Patriots made. They retained Dante Hightower. That's very important for the front seven. And they also add Rex Burkhead, who is getting some buzz as maybe the guy who's going to be there. They certainly rotate the running backs, but he's potentially going to do maybe the bulk of the work next year.
And think about this. They did not need him. They had Deion Lewis. They had James White, who's a tremendous receiving back. And they went out and got Burkhead anyway, so they clearly are very confident in him as a player. This was more about getting the Burkhead talent than just getting a guy that could fill a role. They're going to create a role for him, and I think he's going to be sensational for them.
All right. Something to watch next year.
Number three.
Topic number three here. We're going to stay on the defensive side of the ball, even though Burkhead was just offense, but that was mostly defense we just talked. DeMarcus Ware hangs him up, at least for the time being. The Broncos, obviously Von Miller has been the star in that pass rush. Ware has been solid in his late career. He was a free agent. He will not sign anywhere for this upcoming season, at least not at the moment. My question to you, Andy, is how do the Broncos fill that void left by Ware? And is it, presumably Shane Ray is going to be the guy who picks up most of the snaps there.
Yeah, I was going to say they filled the void 2 years ago when they drafted Shane Ray in the first round, and he's been good for them in spot duty. He has looked like a first-round talent. Now he has a chance to become a first-round-level producer, and they still have Shaquille Barrett backing them up, so that's a good three-man rotation at the outside linebacker spot. They signed Dakota Watson. I wouldn't attribute much to that. I think their number four outside backer, maybe that's it. Maybe they find him somewhere else. But they have three guys they can use with Von Miller, Shane Ray, and Shaquille Barrett. This team's just fine.
Yeah. They just have 1,000 pass rushers. Yeah.
You're right. And what they also have are man-to-man corners, so they can scheme pressure designs with these pass rushers. If you have good man corners, it's easier to blitz because your corners take care of the timing of the pass play, and the blitz disrupts the timing of the pass play as well. You need to play man when you blitz. So they've got the corners to do it. They can be more aggressive and more creative with their pass rush designs. DeMarcus Ware was a very good player for him. He still is effective, and if he does choose to come back, I think that's – I don't know him at all, but I bet it's 50-50 kind of reading the tea leaves. He'll be a good player for someone else when he plays again, if he plays again. So this is a good situation for everyone across the board, I think.
Yeah. Certainly Hall of Famer regardless if this is the last we have seen of DeMarcus Ware.
Number four.
DeMarcus Ware's old team. That's going to be topic number four. The Cowboys, you know, Andy, you weren't worried last week when they lost two safeties. J.J. Wilcox off to Tampa Bay and Barry Church, a Jacksonville Jaguar now. They have now lost two cornerbacks. Brandon Carr signs with the Ravens. Morris Claiborne, a bit of a first-round disappointment. He goes to the Jets. I don't know, Andy. Is it time to freak out if you're a Cowboys fan?
Now, freaked out's a little strong. Those were quality guys for him, though, but they've got replacements. They have Anthony Brown, who I think you know I loved him last year as a six-round rookie. And I know they liked him. They felt the same way I did about him. The fans didn't because they saw Brown get beat on a national televised game and on a Thanksgiving game, and that kind of became his reputation. It's a coincidence that his two mistakes just came on those grand stages. Week in and week out, snap in and snap out, he was absolutely sensational playing the slot and playing outside as a rookie. So he becomes their number two cornerback now, and then they signed Nolan Carroll from Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Carroll's been a steadily improving corner as well. Not a slot guy, but they don't need that. They have Skandrick and Brown, so he plays outside at number three, and it's also mostly a zone scheme. So we just talked about Denver and the importance of man-to-man corners. Well, you don't need dominant corners to play zone, and not the way they play zone there in Dallas either. So overall, I understand the decisions. They'll miss Claiborne. They did want him back. He is, he was a disappointment the first few years, but he showed what he was. He showed his merit last season when he was on the field. His issue was he hasn't been on the field often enough.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, this is a downgrade, maybe not a major downgrade, but a little bit of a downgrade of the secondary here.
Potentially. Brown's not a finished product, and then Nolan Carroll's a little bit younger than Brandon Carr, and Carroll's not, he might be a finished product, but he was such a late bloomer, you always wonder. And keep in mind, Carr, who's older, could have been going in the other direction there, not developing, regressing. So yeah, it probably is a downgrade initially, but it might not be a downgrade come October, November, when these guys have played a little bit more.
All right, lots more to go here. Lots of stuff on the offense side of the ball. We got Kaepernick. We got some running back dominoes falling here. But before we do, just wanted to give a quick programming note. We have fallen shamelessly, unforgivably behind with mailbag questions. We are going to do either next week or 2 weeks from now, we'll do another mailbag-only show like we did early in the offseason. If you have questions, send them. Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGremling_SI. We are both on Facebook. Facebook is nice, right as long as you want. You can also send to talkback@themmqb.com. Just put podcast somewhere in there so that we actually see it. But send those questions in, and we are going to jump right back into our show.
Number five.
Topic number five, we're going to talk about a guy who is out there, and people everyone's got a theory as to why he's still out there right now. That is Colin Kaepernick. Andy, I'll sort of let you go here. I'll sort of lean into it with a lot of conspiracy theories about Kaepernick and his decision to protest the national anthem last year is playing into the fact that he cannot get a job right now around the league.
And I don't think it has very much to do with whether he stands or doesn't stand for the national anthem. Does that help him that he chose to not stand? Probably not, but I don't think it hurts him hardly at all. What hurts him is he doesn't stand in the pocket, which is what I wrote last week on the MMQB. And the reason that's an issue is you have to really adjust your offense for a runaround mobile quarterback. And most offenses are not set up to be conducive to that, especially in the NFL, because those guys don't succeed in the NFL. The only one who really is like that now is Buffalo and Tyrod Taylor, and they go to great lengths to accommodate him. Now, there are other quarterbacks who do run around and make plays, Russell Wilson, for example, but they're not utterly reliant on that style of play. Kaepernick is, and so often when you put on the film, what statistics never capture, we talk about it all the time, Gary, are throws that are not attempted that should be attempted. And that is a big essence of quarterbacking, and he is by far the worst defender in the NFL in that regard. He'll leave open receivers on the field. He has very little understanding of timing, anticipation, and route concepts. He doesn't seem to understand the reason plays are called and what routes to anticipate working against what looks and why we're doing this and why we're doing that is just a bunch of individual randomized plays with him. So if you sign him, the question is, well, then how do you play with that guy? Like, what do you do? If he's your backup, that doesn't work because he's totally different than whoever your starter is. So your offense gets overhauled the second he has to touch the field. You want your backup to be similar to your starter stylistically. You don't want him to be a starter because you can't trust him. He's not a great passer. That's the other problem. He's not a particularly accurate passer. As one coach once said to me, he only has one club in his bag. He has a driver, and that's it. He's a big, hard velocity thrower, but that's not all you do in pro football. So I guess the long and short of it, Gary, is he's not good enough to be in the NFL, or certainly not to be an NFL starting quarterback.
You know, we talked a little bit about this probably about a year ago, kind of around the time when I started the show. I kind of like the thought of having the sort of randomized, sort of approach with my backup quarterback as opposed to, I mean, yeah, you want a quality backup. You want Jimmy Garoppolo as your backup, and that's how everyone wants to do it. But in a league where we're struggling so badly to find 32 capable starters. I hate the thought of going with, when the Texans had to go with T.J. Yates a couple years ago or stuff like that. I think your offense is just so limited in that capacity. And I mean, I know,
so
I guess the trade-off
is... I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it sounds like what you're saying is a backup is inherently limited anyway. So whether he's the same style as the starters, academic, because he's so limited, you're not running your full offense with any backup. So why not have one that can, in theory, create offense with his legs on his own at times?
Yes. Or, I mean, look, you look at Kaepernick, legs and arm strength are both tremendous. They're elite qualities. And I certainly understand you don't want to build an offense around a guy who really so limited as a passer, but if my starter's down and I need someone who can put points on the board, I feel better about a guy like Kaepernick, a runaround guy, sort of a natural playmaker guy, as opposed to a guy who's basically just going to run sort of like a watered down offense, watered down version of the offense I was using before.
And I think you make a great case, and it's really just a difference in philosophy. And I bet there are 16 coaches in the NFL who agree with me on this, and 16 who agree with you. And so I hear what you're saying. The reason I'm always hesitant about that, and I think you are making a great case, but players hate playing with these kind of quarterbacks. That's what people don't talk about. Receivers hate it. Offensive linemen hate it because they don't know what to anticipate from the guy, and so it becomes harder for them to practice and hone their craft. And I think it's a tough sell. I mean, no one's going to step up and say we don't want him as our backup QB once he's on the team, but it's a tough sell when you're out there coaching an entire team, trying to get everyone to play correctly, and you have the guy who's with the ball in his hand who doesn't play correctly, and he's not fundamentally sound, and it impacts everybody else. I think it just becomes hard to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, I was, just to touch on the off the field stuff real quick, I was kind of surprised when he opted out of the contract just because the 49ers were very accommodating. Ownership was very accommodating of his stance, of his protest. And, I think most of us, especially in the media, really had no problem with it. I think it's sort of a nice thing that he could draw attention to a social problem. People have a huge problem with, though, across the league. And there were some folks who said, I don't like that guy disrespecting the anthem and that sort of thing. And for him to sort of go out in the open like this, I was surprised that he made that decision.
I don't really have a strong opinion. As far as the anthem thing, I kind of respected his gall to do it, at least, because he did not have leverage. I mean, he was not the starting QB there. His contract's basically year to year. It's not a super stable contract. And so his timing for him personally could not have been worse, to take a political stance that could possibly alienate people. And yet he did it anyway, and he did the $1 million donation. So he at least put his money where his mouth is. Now, whether you like what his mouth is saying or not, it's a whole different discussion, and I don't have a strong opinion there. I admired the gall, but maybe it has impacted him a little bit here. But this whole thing, the better you can play, the easier all this stuff becomes.
Yeah.
For at least for you. And now, if Kaepernick were a superstar and he's kneeling for the anthem, that makes it complicated for everybody around him. But he's still getting a job if that were the case. So yeah. At the end of it, it all comes down to your playing ability.
You think Buffalo would make the most sense? Back up Tyrod?
I guess I do because of what I've been saying, yeah.
All right.
I guess I have to say yes to that, right?
Yes, you do. I'm making you.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I do think that would make the most – that they run a very rudimentary offense, too. In all seriousness, I do think that kind of – that situation would probably make the most sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number six.
Let's go number six. Running backs falling into place a little bit here, and we're going to start in Minnesota. Latavius Murray goes from Oakland to the Vikings. He will be the new number one back there. You know, you and I were not particularly high on Murray, and I think it's going to be a pretty huge test. You know, he had a very good offensive line in front of him in Oakland. That is not the case in Minnesota. They made some moves at tackle this offseason to get a little bit better, but you know, this is not a line that creates a whole lot for its running backs.
It's not, and I think Jerick McKinnon's their best running back there.
Yeah.
He'll probably have I don't know if he'll get the most touches because I don't think he's a guy that could probably handle more than 12 to 15 touches a game. He's a rotational guy. But you can do a lot more with McKinnon than you can with Murray. And this was the issue I had with these guys, these running backs. I honestly thought Murray and Lacy, who we're going to talk about in a second, these veteran, like Garrett Blunt, who I believe is still unsigned. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yep.
So I was thinking these guys, I thought they might wash out of the league this year because you can find their style of running back in the draft. Those draft guys, or even afterwards, as undrafted free agents. Those guys are so much cheaper. They're fresher. And so really all that sets these other veterans apart are their experience as blockers, probably, which is the hardest part of being a running back mentally. And so their running back market did get depressed. That was totally expected. It wound up better than I thought, though, Gary, honestly. I didn't think anyone would want to give Murray even as much as $3 million a year, which is not big money in the NFL. I don't know what else there is to say here, though. I mean, it's okay, Latavius Murray's your runner now, and they're going to rotate other guys, and there's not a lot to do with any of them.
Yeah, you know, one thing we didn't touch on with Murray, I kind of like him in the passing game. I kind of thought he was pretty good in the screen game. It's a little bit unexpected because he's huge. He's a huge big back, and I think he's got a good nose for the goal line in short yardage, even though he's not necessarily as violent a runner as you'd like to see. But I don't know. I just feel like we've been not saying nice things about Latavius Murray, so I thought I'd fill that void.
And that's fair, and I appreciate that. And I agree with all those things. My issue is, okay, well, he does it for $3 million. Other guys would do that same thing for $1 million.
You those could. I mean, look, it's a very deep draft for running backs. I mean, you can get these guys. They're coming at less than $1 million per year for 4 years. So, you know, if you're wondering why a couple of these big names are still out there for running backs, that is probably why. One guy who is not out there anymore, and this is topic number seven, that is Eddie Lacy to the Seattle Seahawks.
Number seven.
The one thing I'll say about this is I kind of like the idea of you have Thomas Rawls, ultra-violent runner, and he's just going to be injury-prone for that reason. And I don't think you can say, you know, the Seahawks, a team that has Super Bowl aspirations, I don't think you can say Thomas Rawls is going to hold up for, 19 games next season. So you have Lacy, and if you had a fresh and in-shape Eddie Lacy move into your lineup in December, I think that's a nice little thing to pull out of your back pocket.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. The guy that we keep, there's two other guys that have to be involved in the conversation, though. CJ Procise, mm-hmm. who is kind of their scat backy type, a gadget player, but their third round pick last year, so he's going to be on the roster. and Alex Collins, their fifth-round pick, who I know people in the league who I respect immensely, who thought he was better than Rawls, and he was their best player. And he's a bigger guy with some – a bigger guy who runs lighter than Rawls, or he's capable of doing that anyway. So you could make the argument, Gary. In fact, I would make the argument that just in terms of their skill set and their talent, Lacy's the fourth best option on this depth chart at running back.
Wow, I'm really surprised to hear that about Alex Collins, because I mean, there's a point where he was sort of battling with a Troy Maine Pope on the depth chart there.
And I don't subscribe to the idea. I think Rawls is the better player. It's not super close to me, but I'm one guy, and there are people in the league who I respect that felt Collins, they liked a lot of what they saw from Collins. Stylistically, Collins is a little I haven't seen a ton of him. He hasn't played a ton.
Yeah.
But from what I have seen, he almost seems like a little bit of a quicker version of what Lacy is. Or at least potentially could. I don't know if he has a kind of – Lacy's so hard to reconcile because he's so ugly running, but he gains 4 yards when he does it. And he doesn't go down. He's hard to tackle. And I don't know how to – I don't know what to make of that. A guy that runs into bodies or, you know, gets contacted a lot but still drags defenders. I mean, obviously that's a good thing, but how much of it can you bank on? You know, how do you draw up plays for a guy like that? You're not going to draw the play up and, okay, Lacy, here at the at the line of scrimmage, you hit the linebacker.
Run into that mass of humanity.
Yeah, so I just don't know how do you use those kind of guys. But Lacy has always been productive in that sense. At some point, though, and we've seen this with other runners, those guys hit the wall a little sooner. And when they hit the wall, they don't come back from it.
Yeah, I guess I boy. That Alex Collins thing, I'm shocked by it. But yeah, the Lacy thing, I think if you roll him out there in December, that could be
Gary, remember Sean Green for the Jets a few years ago? That was exactly what he did. He came out in December. Now, he was fast. He was fast for his size. He was like Lacy. No, he wasn't as heavy as Lacy, but he's a big back. And he had that speed on the sweep plays that could get downhill momentum rolling really well. But he came in late in December and then into the playoffs and was just fresher than everybody else. And that was a really big positive for him. And keep in mind, it doesn't have to be Lacy either. It could be if you've got, we just said, four running backs, it could be any one of those four guys who comes in fresher. Thomas Rawls did that last year for him with mixed results, but some positive results. So they have options at the position at least. But Lacy, I think we can agree on this. Do not expect Lacy, even though their styles might appear similar, he's not going to be anything close to what Marshawn Lynch was when Lynch was at his heyday.
Yeah. And speaking of whom, that is topic number 8.
Number 8.
Marshawn Lynch, the rumor is he is going to unretire and join up with his hometown Oakland Raiders, and he would... I guess be a complimentary piece to the two small backs they have there, Jalen Richard and who am I forgetting about, Andy? DeAndre Washington.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. It would be...
I was going to say Jalen Richard. You already took Richard. I was going to say him again.
There you go. I mean, Lynch back in the league would be... it would be entertaining. I don't even know what to make of this, though. We haven't... You know, obviously, we haven't seen the guy in... you know, since the 2015 season, I mean, to come back and be leaned on by one of the best offenses of football, it would be fascinating if nothing else.
Yeah, I think there's two things we have to sort out is what would his role be and what could he actually bring to the table? Because we saw him in 2015, and when we saw him that year, he ran 111 times for 417 yards on the season. He was not an impactful player. Injuries obviously were a factor at times. So he really has not been a dynamite player since 2014. So he was nothing in 2015. He missed 2016. Now we're at 2017. He didn't get younger during that time. So what are you actually getting with Marshawn Lynch is the first item. Let's say you get a decent version of him, though, which I think that's realistic.
Yeah.
Then it's what are you expecting out of him? And I would imagine it'd be 8 carries a game, something about like that. Those other guys, Washington and Richard, they both need to be on the field. They can create their own yardage. And they run the designs of Oakland's offense, which feature a lot of backside zone cut runs, You get up one side of the field, cut it back the other side. Those two backs are very good at doing that. Lynch was too, but he doesn't get to it the same way. Those other guys are quick, darting between the tackles, runners, and Oakland is set up to play that way in the run game.
Yeah, and I guess it would just be interesting. You bring in Lynch, you're not going to have four running backs active most weeks. So if they're bringing in Lynch, presumably they are bringing him in to play, and those two other guys have roles. So it'll be fun, if nothing else.
Well, and keep in mind, Tywan Jones is a running back on their depth chart. Now, he's not going to get a lot of playing time on offense, but you said you're not keeping four active. Jones is a very valuable special teamer. So How does that impact who's active and not? And maybe it doesn't impact it at all, but it's just worth mentioning that he'll almost certainly take up a roster spot on the running back depth chart just because of what he brings on special teams.
Yep.
Number nine.
The Raiders make another move. This is topic number nine. My favorite player, Andy's favorite player, your favorite player, Jared Cook, ends up in Oakland. Couldn't come to terms with Green Bay. Seems like he was the first choice out there, and they sort of tripped and fell into Martellus Bennett, who, as we discussed on the last show, is a bit of an upgrade over Jared Cook. Cook is still an interesting piece, and it seems like he's that's something they've lacked in that offense. Clive Walford maybe not quite at the level that Cook is.
And new offensive coordinator Todd Downing has plans for the tight end position, and they wanted a tight end, and they've got one now and one that they can build around, and I'm eager to see how it goes. And keep in mind, the Raiders have always been, well, the last 2 years, so the Raiders with Derek Carr have been very good formationally. They do a lot of different formations and personnel packages, and they spread out and they condense the field. They do all sorts of things. Cook gave that dimension to Green Bay's offense last year. That's what made him valuable. When you have a tight end who's a threat, you become a much more aggressive and dynamic multi-formational offense because that tight end can line up anywhere, and there's a domino effect that comes with that.
Yeah.
Number 10.
Let's wrap it up here, Andy, with topic number 10, and this is literally the biggest guy on our list this week. Dontari Poe lands with the defending NFC champion Atlanta Falcons. The interesting thing here is Poe has a $500,000 weight bonus, according to Pro Football Talk, to stay under 330. So you'd presumably the Falcons are getting a slim down Dontari Poe, and this is a guy who already moved really well at 346. Like we said on the free agency preview show, he was never quite the sum of his parts in Kansas City, but it would be interesting to see what he'd play at a lighter weight and what the Falcons might ask him to do.
I would think they'll ask him to be the nose shade, so not a true nose tackle, and a nose tackle lines up directly over the center and is responsible for both A-gaps, one on each side of them. A nose shade lines up tilted towards the center and tends to be more into one of the A-gaps. Then that's how they play in Atlanta. That's their gap rule principle. It's the under-front, over-front stuff, and now we're getting a little football technically. But suffice it to say, I think Poe's going to – Brandon Mebane was the guy who did it for the Seahawks for many years.
Forever.
I think Poe – but, yeah, I think Poe becomes their Brandon Mebane, and I like his chances in that role. So you get that element of it, and we're talking kind of in run defense along those lines. The other thing you get, Gary – Poe's not a bad pass rusher. Now, he's not a dominant one, but he has pretty light feet for his size.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, you can have him playing your nickel packages. Now, you're not going to put him on the field in third down and 10 and have him rush as a three technique. You're probably not doing that. But anymore, teams have to play nickel on first and second down because offenses are going three wide receiver on those downs. And you still want to be able to stop the run on those downs. Those are running downs with passing personnel on the field. So if you have a defensive tackle who can play the run out of your nickel package, that's what Poe gives them. And that's something they'll do in Atlanta. They have a lot of defensive line rotations. They try to match their defensive linemen to the situation on the field. Poe gives them the ability now to match to those first and second down passing formation situations and still stay strong in run defense.
Now, in that scenario, would he and Grady Jarrett stay on the field in those nickel packages?
Yes, so the cornerback comes in for a linebacker, and so now you have two linebackers and three corners and then two safeties, and that's your nickel, and your four-man defensive line stays the same as if you were in base, and they probably play the same rules as their base defense even. So it's almost a hybrid defense to some degree. A lot of teams do it. I'm sure Atlanta, I'd have to go back and look exactly who played well where and what situations, but I know they did it last year because Rashid Hageman's a guy like that for them. So Poe's a better version of Rashid Hageman, yeah, essentially. And I like him next to Jared as well, because Jared's a guy that transcends all of these things. So they have and they re-signed Courtney Upshaw, and they view him as a strict defensive tackle now. Not a lot of guys transition from outside linebacker, yeah, to defensive tackle, and that's now their career, but that's what Upshaw's found. And the fact that they brought him back, he was on a one-year deal last year, that speaks well for him. So they've got it set. They clearly have an idea in mind from what they want in the position, and what they liked about Upshaw there is he's a big guy. So Upshaw's big. He's about a 300-pounder. Poe, we know, is big, too big, according to his contract terms. Mm-hmm. And Grady Jarrett's very big. They want size inside, but they still have athleticism in all three of those guys, a former linebacker, a first-round pick in Poe, and then Grady Jarrett, who we all thought was tremendous last year.
Yeah, and Poe reportedly turning down more money to come to Atlanta, so that'll be a fun year for the Falcons.
Do we know who he turned the money down for? I'm sorry, do we know who he rejected?
The Jags reportedly offered more guaranteed money, and he was in there with the Colts for a while. And this is from Josina Anderson reporting this, ESPN's Josina Anderson. So it should be a really interesting year for the Atlanta defense, which, look, got a whole lot better as last year went on and was a very good unit by the end of the season. Andy, we're getting a whole lot better this offseason, I think. Maybe.
We're doing what we can. We'll go back and listen to the show, take some notes.
Yeah, we put in a workmanlike effort. We'll have plenty of draft stuff coming up, by the way, too. Andy was just down in North Carolina meeting with Mitchell Trubisky, so learning about some of the quarterbacks here. But that'll do it for now. Thank you, as always, to producer Matt Havia, staying up with the latest night. Also, Chris Basil going to clean this up, make us sound half-human. All those guys at Digital Media, always best for us. Most of all, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast and for sticking with us this offseason. Like I said, we want to hear from you. Send the questions, send the constructive criticism, whatever you got. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. That includes the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.